This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham.
The official name is The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but most of us know them as the Mormons. The faith, as you may have noticed, was getting exceptional attention earlier this year, especially back when some evangelical Christians on the Republican right were saying they could not support one of the GOP contenders for the White House because, in their view, Mormons were not Christians. That issue seems to have died away now that Mitt Romney is the official Republican presidential nominee. But in all the heat of this past summer's rhetoric, what may not have gotten addressed is a very simple question. What do Mormons believe? So we've asked four different Virginia researchers to give us their take this hour. They certainly have extensive qualifications and surprisingly different insights. And if you have a view on Mormonism, we'd also love to hear your perspective right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. What do Mormons believe? By the end of the hour, we should have a much better sense of the answer to that question, I hope. And if you'd like to help us get there, we have a phone line open for you right now at 888-WMRA-TALK. Along the way, we may need to address some ancillary questions, like, are Mormons Christians? And what does it mean to be a Christian? If you've got contributions to offer here, you're welcome to join in too. 888-967-2825. Later in the program, we will be hearing from a scholar who is himself a Mormon and has won high praise for what critics have called the exceptional even-handedness in the several books that he has written about his faith. But we start with an old friend who's returning to the Insight Studios for at least the 17th time, Professor of Religion from the University of Virginia, Valerie Cooper. Dr. Cooper, great to see you again.
It's wonderful to be here.
And that was only a slight exaggeration, wasn't it? You've been here at least twice before?
This is my third visit.
Okay. Well, also with us, a scholar of early Protestant religious movements in America from James Madison University, the Reverend Dr. Robert Brown. Bob, welcome to the Insight Studios.
Nice to be here.
And just to make things interesting, an historian, Matt Hedstrom, who works both in American studies and religious studies at the University of Virginia. Dr. Hedstrom, thank you for making time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Matt, as the history guy, you may be the odd man out today. So let's start with you. What's the simplest answer you can think of in response to the question, what do Mormons believe?
Well, the simplest answer would be to start with the story of Mormon origins. And very briefly, it's to locate Mormonism in 1820s and 1830s New York. And a farm boy named Joseph Smith, who Mormons believe was chosen by God as a prophet who was given visions of God and of Jesus, and who was told by an angel who visited him of the location of some golden tablets that contained what we now know of as the Book of Mormon. And so Mormons believe that Joseph Smith was a prophet, in some ways maybe similar to the role that Muhammad plays in Islam, who was given a new revelation, a new set of scriptures, and a mission. And that mission was to restore a wayward Christianity, as they understood it, as he understood it, to its rightful path.
Mormons believe that Jesus of Nazareth was the Christ, was the Son of God.
Yes.
Yes. But, and they are responding to what was a concern for, I think, a lot of biblical Christians in America, that there didn't seem to be any mention of America in the Bible, in the Old Testament and New Testament. And so there was a great deal of concern, particularly among eschatologically inclined Christians who were looking at the Book of Revelation and the like, wondering what happens to America.
Valerie, I'm not sure I could pronounce that. I know I can't spell it. Could you explain
eschatologically? Yeah, okay. Yes. Concerned about the end times. There was tremendous concern about the end of time and about Christ's second coming, about the possibility of a cataclysmic war, Armageddon.
So Mormons place America, at least North America and the United States, firmly in Christianity.
Firmly in the center of the story.
And we'll talk a little bit more on that in a moment. but over to someone else who's actually an historian as well as a religious scholar, Bob Brown. What would you say is the simplest answer to the question, what do Mormons believe?
Well, it really ties into what both Valerie and Matt have said, and that is Mormons believe that they have rediscovered something that was lost. True Christianity, which was lost rather shortly after Jesus appeared on earth, in a sense migrates over to the New World and lies dormant or hidden for the better part of 1,400 years. So when Joseph Smith digs up those plates and is trying to think about what this means, he in the books and the scriptures that he discovers and also gives by revelation, finds that lost, pure Christianity and restores it to the world. And it's something that exists primarily in the New World.
And part of what these tablets reveal that Mormons believe is that after Jesus was resurrected, he made his way to North America, located the Native Americans that were already living here.
Yes.
Felt that he had found the, or at least a, lost tribe of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You're
yes.
nodding your head. So
yes,
that's
on.
True. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, the story that's told in the Book of Mormon is a story of Jewish exiles escaping the corruption of the old world, escaping the destruction of the Jewish people, and finding their way eventually over to the New World and inhabiting the New World and becoming a new people. So this is one of the ways in which I think Mormonism locates the significance of the New World within the divine history of the old world. So it's a
yes.
way of saying that what's happening in the New World is a part of that bigger story of what God was doing with the Jewish people and with Christianity as it developed out of Judaism.
Yeah, and yes. very particularly that...
This is Matt Hedstrom.
The Matt Hedstrom, yes. Hi, that New World story in many ways recapitulates the story of the Hebrew scriptures, of the story of the Jews and their relationships with God. It's a story of a sort of covenant with God, falling away, the consequences of that falling away in terms of sin and despair and destruction, and then renewal, right? And those cycles that we read about in the Hebrew scriptures are sort of retold in the Book of Mormon, located in the New World.
But historian Matt Hedstrom, as a religion that began celebrating America and celebrating, I guess, the idea and the value of the United States of America, it was not at all a religion that was welcomed in the United States.
Well, so we need to make a distinction here in a certain sense between America and the United States, right? There's very much a story here about sacred history occurring in the New World, right? Both in terms of what we've been talking about, the lost tribes of Israel, Christ coming to the New World, Eden being located in the New World, the second coming will occur in the New World. And a much more ambivalent relationship to the United States as a kind of political entity.
Or an ethnic entity.
Or an ethnic entity, right. Yeah.
Don't stop there.
All right. I mean,
just because Valerie jumped in.
Yeah.
I've heard the rumors. I know that the two of you argue about this,
yeah.
you know, because you have offices located near each other
this
over
is true.
In the VA.
This is true.
So don't,
yes.
Don't let her threaten you. You just keep on going.
Well, from the very beginning, there's elements of Mormon teaching that understood the United States, the political entity of the United States, as having a sacred role. The Constitution, there are elements in which Joseph Smith thought, perhaps especially the First Amendment, protections of religious liberties, was divinely inspired. This is taking some sort of, we could call them almost folk understandings that are quite common in the United States.
That's right,
that there's something
civil religion.
Exceptional
yes.
and maybe even divine about the United States and really making it official. You got that on one hand.
Yes.
On the other hand, there's this story of persecution and exile. Mormons were ultimately forced to leave what was then the United States to find and build their Zion.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a good observation.
I don't know what I would add to that.
Well, I guess I'm concerned because, so we have talked about this before, Matt and I, and it seems to me that part of the difficulty that Mormons run up against in the 19th century is that there's this kind of construction of what it means to be American, right? And perhaps Mitt Romney continues to run up against this, right? And perhaps this is why the campaign doesn't necessarily emphasize his Mormonism, this idea that it's, you know, is it, how American is it? You know, how Christian is it? How safe is it, right?
Isn't there some irony, though, Valerie Cooper, that you have a religion that starts in America, starts in upstate New York, celebrates the idea of America, at least what it sees as America, and as Matt was saying, what much of the Constitution and democracy of the United States of America is supposed to be about, and yet gets chased out of the United States by the U.S. Army.
Then today,
we have a Mormon standing a good chance of becoming president.
That's right. And Mitt Romney is facing the same difficulty that Barack Obama is. I mean, in some ways, Barack Obama's blackness is construed as being somehow alien and foreign and Kenyan, right?
And so we get the birther movement.
That's right. That's right. And so the question becomes that both of these men have to answer, or perhaps answer by not answering, how American they are, how presidential they are, have to respond to what is regarded as their strangeness, perhaps by others. But there's another point, too. I mean, Mormonism is a restorationist movement. Bob, I think you're right about that. But it also embodies a lot of the controversies that were going on in America in the 19th century, controversies like slavery.
Our guest this hour from James Madison University, you just heard his voice until I so rudely cut him off, Robert Brown from the University of Virginia, Valerie Cooper, as well as Matt Hedstrom. We're looking at the question, what do Mormons believe, on this edition of Virginia Insight? I'm Tom Graham. If you have an additional question you'd like to ask or a comment you're willing to toss in, or maybe a little bit based on your own experience of Mormonism or any other aspect of religion, our phone number is 888-WMRA-TALK. 888-967-2825. You can also post a question or comment on our Facebook page. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight.
I was just going to add to what Valerie said. I think one of the things in Joseph Smith's lifetime, and certainly early Mormonism, that probably was this sort of alienating quality about Mormonism, at least for a lot of Americans, was the claim to prophecy. And this is a period of time, of course, when democracy is very new in America, and what democracy is going to be settled. But one of the things that Americans seem to cherish is this idea of liberty, of the freedom to think for oneself. So
Jacksonian
at least,
democracy.
Yeah, so at least a part of what people perceived, I think, in Mormonism, rightly or wrongly, was a kind of authoritarianism in Joseph Smith and in the leadership under Brigham Young and others, which deprived Americans of the ability to choose, perhaps. And so they saw that as a kind of threat to their own notions about a free society, a democratic society.
Are we also looking at an era, though, when chasing other religious beliefs out of America, including those that claimed to be Christian, was somewhat common? I mean, there were a fair number of Protestants who were trying to chase Catholics out of the U.S. after the Civil War, and some historians who say that one of the reasons that the public education movement got such a big start after the U.S. Civil War ended was because Protestants were worried about the fact that Catholics were opening up their private parochial schools, and Protestants needed to catch up, so let's have the government pay for public schools.
Well, on that particular issue, I think in some ways the history worked in the reverse direction, in that Catholics perceived the public schools to be de facto Protestant schools and said, okay, we're going to set up our own schools in response to that. But you're absolutely right that there's, especially before the Civil War, the history of Protestant-Catholic tensions that I think we see mirrored in some of the Protestant-Mormon tensions.
So we're taking on just about any aspect of religion that you might want to offer. If you've got one, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Although our basic question still is, what do Mormons believe? And we have a gentleman who has written extensively on this subject who's going to be joining us from the University of Richmond in just a few moments. The Mormon Tabernacle Choir, with a quite famous song, Bringing in the Sheaves. Joining us now by phone is a man who has authored or co-authored at least half a dozen books about the Mormon religion. He is himself a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and, in fact, once served as a church bishop in the Richmond area. He's also a professor of religion and literature at Richmond University. Terrell Givens, thank you for making time for us.
Thank you for inviting me. Good to be here.
Well, I understand you've been listening to the first part of the program on your computer. What was your reaction to what you heard these other religion scholars talking about your faith?
Well, I have to say, given the tenor of the discourse about Mormonism in the media over the last 6 months, the last 20 minutes has been refreshing. I haven't heard anything that I would disagree with. I think we've heard some enlightened and interesting ways of thinking about Mormonism and its relationship to other Christian religions and to America generally.
Well, I want to get your take on this question, what do Mormons believe? But all of a sudden, we've got a whole bunch of phone calls. So if we can hold on your response to that and get some of our listeners' questions, I think that'd be good. Let's go to Bridgewater first. This is Jim. Jim, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for any of our guests, please.
Yes, I was wondering if any of the historians there could tell me what age Joseph Smith, the farm boy, was when he discovered the tablets, and do any of them have a sketch of his life prior to when he discovered the tablets? And the second half of the question, would any of them like to comment on a book, No Man Knows My History, by Ann Brody, biography.
Jim, hold on for a second. Let's at least get to the first part of your question. We're going to go to Dr. Givens first. Do you know, Terrell, what age Joseph Smith was when this prophecy was discovered?
Yes, he was 17 when he first claimed that he had a visitation from an angel named Moroni telling him about the sacred record. And he was 21 when 4 years later he was directed to retrieve those records and begin translating them.
So when Jim asks what he was doing before the discovery was made, basically he was a farm boy?
He was just a farm boy at upstate New York.
Hadn't he also been involved in some mystical activities, searching for treasure, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. He did have a reputation in upstate New York, in the area he lived, for being something of a scryer. He and a group that he associated with were involved at times in treasure seeking. He spent time digging for a lost silver mine. He had a seer stone with which it was said he could locate lost treasures. So, yes, he was involved in some of those practices, pretty common in the folk magic traditions of rural New England and New York.
And Jim, you had a second question about the book?
Yeah, so would they like to comment either on the book No Man Knows My History by, I believe it's Ann Brody, I'm not certain of the author, but No Man Knows My History, it's a biography of Joseph Smith. And I believe he was arrested for divining in New York or either in Vermont and taking money and not finding those mines of which your guest there speaks.
Terrell might be able to speak more about...
This is Matt Hedstrom.
Matt Hedstrom, yes. Thanks. About the Fawn, I believe her name is Fawn Brody's book. I think it's one of the first modern biographies of Joseph Smith, and I think it caused quite a bit of stir within the church.
Well, it did, in part because she was related to one of the presidents of the church. I think most Mormons would consider it a rather unfair portrait. And, of course, I think most all historians who have read it consider Fawn Brody to be something of a, you know, her genre is more psychobiography than mainstream biography per se, but she sure had the gift of a novelist, and it probably continues to be the biography of Joseph Smith that is the most read biography, although I think it's been superseded by Richard Bushman's recent book, Rough Stone Rolling, a more thorough and, I think, well-researched biography of Joseph Smith.
Jim, thank you so much for your call. All of a sudden, the other lines that we had callers in on have opened up. So I don't know if people had other things they had to do or they're having problems with their cell phones, but that means if you listening tried to call in and the line was busy, you should now be able to reach us at 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. If you want to contribute to this conversation addressing the question, what do Mormons believe, with our guests, historian Matt Hedstrom, religion scholar Valerie Cooper, religion scholar Terrell Givens, and religion scholar, as well as historian, Robert Brown. So, Terrell, this question, what do Mormons believe? Would you take a crack at it, please?
Well, sure. I think there are many different ways of characterizing Mormonism in the context of the 19th century. I would prefer to see Mormonism in terms of the story that it tells about the purpose of life and the eternal history of the human soul. Traditionally, theology deals with events from the creation to the resurrection. Mormonism extends that story in both directions. So I think there are five fundamental principles of Mormonism that I would point to as essential. First, Mormons believe in a personal God. The creeds believe in a God of without body parts or passions. Mormonism turns that inside out and affirms belief in a God of body parts and passions, a personal feeling God. Second, Mormons believe that the spirit of man is eternal, meaning they believe that all humans lived with God before this world was created as spirit beings in his presence. Third, Mormons deny the tragedy of the original fall as a catastrophe. They see life rather as an ascent instead of as a fall. Fourth, they think that God has the capacity as well as the desire to save the entire human family, not just a select few. And so they have a version of soteriology that embraces the possibility of a universal salvation. And they are, in that sense, effectively universalists. And finally, Mormons believe that heaven will consist of the continuation of those relationships that matter most to us now. And foremost in this area would be the Mormon teaching that marriage, for example, can be eternal rather than just for this life.
Would any of you like to take issue, agree, disagree?
Certainly. This is Matt from the University of Virginia. Yeah. This last point about family life, I think, is one of the points that seems to me to be of particularly appealing in modern Mormonism to many Americans, also part of the perception of Mormonism from the outside. We think of large families. We think of very tight-knit families. I don't know if there is a religion that doesn't emphasize sort of family and family life, but it sure seems that there's something particularly powerful about the Mormon sort of vision of the eternal family.
Next call coming in from Quicksburg. Kathy, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
Well, it was almost answered a second ago about the marriage lasting even after death. I was asking that question because I hate to admit that I'm on my fourth marriage, but on my third one, when I was during the ceremony, the minister said, instead of until death do you part, she said forever and ever. And I'm sort of going, oh, my God, am I going to be married to him when I die?
And Dr. Givens, I take it that if Kathy and her spouse were Mormon, their expectation would be that they would be married after they die.
Yes, I mean that's subject to certain conditions, as most states in the hereafter would be. But in most people are familiar with the fact that Mormons have temples. They have temples in addition to meeting houses. Meeting houses are open to the general public. Anybody may go there and worship, but a temple Mormons reserve for what they consider to be the most sacred and solemn ordinances or sacraments of their religion. And one of those ordinances is what they call the sealing for time and eternity. So those couples who are wed there and who are faithful to their covenants are those who inherit that relationship of eternal marriage in the hereafter.
So we have four guests with us, from James Madison University, Robert Brown, from the University of Virginia, Valerie Cooper and Matt Hedstrom, and with us by phone from the University of Richmond, Terrell Givens. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. I understand that amongst the four of you, there may be some disagreement about whether or not you would consider the Mormon faith to be a Christian faith. I want to phrase the question this way. It is my understanding that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of different sects of Christianity around the world today. And there is wide variety in what people of those different faiths, different aspects of Christianity, would say that they believe. But it seems to me that there are maybe three things that they would all agree upon. One is that there was a man who was known as Jesus of Nazareth, who became known as Jesus Christ, who walked the earth in an area near what we would today call Israel, in human form, that he was the Son of God, and that he engaged in preaching, leaving teachings behind about how human beings should lead their life. You're all nodding.
I think that's
Terrell,
right.
I can't see you, but would you be in agreement?
I'm nodding too.
Okay. So if all groups that get to call themselves Christian agree on those few things that I just mentioned, is there any reason why Mormons should not be allowed to be thought of as Christians? Valerie?
It seems to me that the ways that Mormons describe these basic ideas, like the nature of God, the nature of Christ, are significantly different. And I think that that's the point that many other Christian groups have problems accepting Mormonism as part of that family. The idea, for example, that there's a personal God, that God was a human being with a human body, that God, my understanding of Mormon belief is that God had multiple wives, that Jesus and Satan are half-brothers, right? This is a significantly different account of God's relationship to Christ than is held in most other Christian sects or denominations.
But aren't there sects and denominations that have widely variant views? There certainly are some sects. One of them, I believe, is called the Roman Catholics, who, when they take communion, believe, as a matter of fact, if you ask them, they will say that they know that they are consuming not wine and a wafer, but they are literally consuming the body of Christ and the blood of Christ. And there are Protestant sects that withdraw from that in horror, that they see that as incredibly bizarre. Big smile on Valerie's face. So we'll get Terrell Givens' take on this, since he is the member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints who's with us this hour. But first, we've got Eric, who's been holding on for quite a while from Harrisonburg. So, Eric, please jump into the conversation.
Okay. Well, I have two questions, the first of which is kind of related to what you just brought up, and that is sort of culture and practice within the church. So, for instance, there are people that are practicing Jews and then others that are more cultural in terms of, you know, what they do and how they behave, but they're not necessarily practicing. The same thing with Catholics. You know, that there are those that go to church regularly that have that belief in transubstantiation that you've just shared, and then others that, you know, are living more or less according to those laws, but are not practicing. And yet, I the Mormons that I have run into in my lifetime, I've never met any that are cultural Mormons that are and not practicing. Is there such a thing?
Is there such a thing as a secular Mormon, Dr. Terrell Givens?
Yeah, I want to answer Valerie's comments, and then I'll start by answering this one. Yeah, there is such a thing. They call them DNA Mormons or cultural Mormons. I think it's a relatively new phenomenon, but there are a number of people who consider that, as a number of sociologists have claimed, that Mormonism is something close to an ethnic community. That word has been employed variously. In fact, if you go to the Harvard Encyclopedia of Ethnic Groups, you'll find Mormonism listed as an ethnic category. So a lot of Mormons will say, I don't believe the tenets, but I have such strong bonds and such a strong heritage and history of affiliation with this people that I identify with them. So that is possible. I want to address some of the comments that Valerie made. She's apparently very well versed on 19th century Mormonism and has referred to a number of the more esoteric aspects of Mormonism that are often raised by way of objection to Mormonism's Christian status. Valerie, you mentioned three things in particular, the belief that God was once a man, that God has multiple wives, that Satan and God are brothers.
Satan and Jesus.
I mean, Satan and Jesus are brothers. The belief that God was once a man is part of a famous sermon that Joseph Smith gave in 1844 called the King Follett Discourse. Unlike many of Joseph Smith's revelations and sermons, that was never canonized. So that belief kind of exists at the margins of Mormon thought. And the Mormon leadership has gone back and forth over the years as to whether they want to consider that a core and essential part of Mormon teaching or not. And at present, it doesn't have a part in the Mormon canon. The notion that God has multiple wives, that probably was alleged by Brigham Young or other 19th century people. That certainly isn't a part of Mormon belief that I'm familiar with. You certainly don't find such a thing in the standard works of the church. And as far as Jesus and Satan being brothers, that's certainly true only in the sense that Mormons believe that all spirit beings were created by God, and in that sense, are all brothers, Jesus Christ being the firstborn. Satan was one of his progeny that rebelled, and we are, all of the human race constitutes the rest of those spirit progeny of God. So, you know, I think that the one thing that Mormons find sometimes frustrating is that all religious traditions go through a period of speculation, of numerous opinions being bandied about. But all churches have a mechanism in place for regulating doctrine and establishing what actually constitutes official teaching or doctrine. And so does Mormonism. And that's why many of these things that circulate in the public arena are a function of the kind of rampant speculation that was typical of late 19th century Mormonism, but isn't to be found in the official teachings of the church.
Valerie, if you'd hold on for a second in your response, because I realize that Eric is still waiting with the second part of his question. Go ahead, Eric.
Okay, well, the second part is this notion of calling or being called to a particular type of service within the church. I have worked in a volunteer group with members of an LDS church that have been, you know, various leaders within the sort of volunteer group, and they have been just told, you're called to do this. And they said, oh, okay, and maybe not necessarily knowing anything about what is expected of them, but, you know, they're told they have been called. So
your question is, what is a calling to service in the Mormon faith?
Yeah.
Terrell?
Well, Mormons, one of their articles of faith is that they believe that all men must be called of God by revelation, by the laying on of hands, to exercise authority in his church. So we think of a calling in the same way that I think most Christians would, that the Spirit speaks, and God issues a calling to a particular vocation.
But it sounds like what Eric had heard is that people get that assigned to them by someone in a position of authority in the church.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say, was that the difference would be that this manifests itself, we believe, through an ecclesiastical structure. So the Mormon Church operates on the belief of what they would call the principle of continuing revelation.
Eric, two great questions. Thank you so much for joining us on Virginia Insight. We're going to continue our discussion here with our four scholars about what it means to be a Mormon, and we've got a couple of phone lines open if you'd like to join in.
I believe that the Lord God created the universe. I believe that he sent his only son to die for my sins. And I believe that ancient Jews built boats and sailed to America. I am a Mormon, and a Mormon just is. You can't.
cannot just believe.
Andrew Rennell's singing the hit song from the hit Broadway musical, The Book of Mormon. Obviously not terribly accurate in theology, but has got a lot of people thinking and talking about the faith commonly referred to as Mormonism. All of our guests have written extensively on various aspects of religion. Terrell Givens, who is himself a Mormon, has authored or co-authored numerous books looking into the history of that faith, including People of Paradox, A History of Mormon Culture. Valerie Cooper is author of Word Like Fire. Bob Brown is author of Jonathan Edwards and the Bible. And Matt Hedstrom's new book, The Rise of Liberal Religion, is due out in just a few weeks. Valerie Cooper.
Yeah, Terrell, that was a great answer. Thanks so much. I think that there is a tremendous amount of confusion about what Mormons actually believe and an amazing amount of sort of folk understanding. So rather than sort of to belabor that, although we could probably go on and talk for a while about this idea of a pre-existent spirit, which is another point that humans have a pre-existent spirit, which is another point that some other Christian groups have difficulty with.
Right.
But let's talk about the Book of Mormon. So I'm looking at a few texts here, like 2 Nephi 36 and 2 Nephi 5:21 through 23 that seem to suggest that blackness is a curse.
Yeah, that has obviously created a lot of problems for the church over the years.
You bet.
And the whole history of Mormonism's relationship to the black race is a very vexed one and fraught with a lot of tragedy. Joseph Smith himself indicated that if he would free the black man, he would be the equal of the white in every way. He ordained blacks to priesthood offices. He welcomed them into the church. Unfortunately, for reasons that we don't fully understand, sometime in the 1850s, Brigham Young appears to have imbibed kind of the typical folk mythologies of his day that were absolutely pervasive in the Christian world that associated the black race with the curse of Canaan or with the curse of Cain. And Brigham Young used that kind of language in issuing a ban on members of the black race participating in the priesthood. And so that ban was in place for many, many years. It was only repealed, of course, in the 1970s.
1978. But
right.
The texts are still... You do agree that there are texts that in the Book of Mormon that associate black skin with curse?
Well, it's hard to say. I think that what many Mormons are... The way they are reading those verses in more... You know, this contemporary era is to hope at least that the blackness there is more figurative than literal. Although there does seem to be the perception, certainly among the Book of Mormon writers, that one way that God differentiated peoples was by imposing a certain darkness or blackness on those who defected from the gospel. You know, it's unfortunate that it's there. I think Mormons would be more comfortable if it weren't.
888-WMRA-TALK is our call-in phone number, 888-967-2825. It looks like we do have one line open at the moment, so if you've been trying to call in and the line was busy, this would be a good time to call back. John in Stanton, thanks for holding on the line. Your question or comment, please.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I think we can all agree Mormons are good people, but the question I have from a theological concept, of course, the term Christianity or the term Christian has a meaning, and it seems to me that at a minimum, it would mean that one believes that Jesus was the Son of God and that Jesus was God and is God. I'm wondering, do Mormons ascribe to those beliefs? And I'll just take the answer off the air, please.
Thanks, John. Matt, you want to take a crack at that?
Sure. I think the short answer to that is yes. Now, there's differences, as Terrell has noted and others have noted, in terms of understanding the nature of the Trinity. So what are the sort of relationships there? But understanding Jesus as God and as Savior is absolutely central to Mormon faith.
Bob Brown?
Yeah, I just think, and again, as Charles pointed out, it's not a Nicene, the understanding of the Trinity that's in the Nicene Creed. That is not the Mormon understanding. But in terms of the general language and concept, it is a Trinitarian form of Christianity.
I think we have a caller who has a question related. Sam, I'm not sure where you're calling from.
Harrisonburg.
Thanks for doing that. Your question or comment, please.
It seems like my question just suddenly got anticipated while I was asking, are Mormons Trinitarian?
In other words, do they believe Father,
Son, and Holy Ghost?
Cheryl Givens?
Yeah, the very first article of faith. We believe in God the Father, His Son, Jesus Christ, and in the Holy Ghost. Mormons believe in all three beings, that all three are divine. The difference with mainstream Christianity is that Mormons believe those are separate and distinct rather than three in one and one in three. So the name that theologians give to that concept is social Trinitarianism. They are one in unity and purpose, but three distinct individuals.
But given that Trinitarianism has been such a central issue for Christianity and a point of much debate, you can understand, Terrell, how people might consider Mormon Trinitarianism to be significantly enough different that it actually is a different religion.
Trinitarianism a big reason for the split between East and West?
Yes, absolutely.
But
both East and West are considering themselves Christian.
They share the same Bible.
I think the point that I would make is that the Catholic Encyclopedia and the Westminster Bible Commentary, a standard Protestant source and a key Catholic source, both say the same thing. They both say the doctrine of the Trinity is nowhere present in the New Testament. It emerged in the early 3rd or 4th Christian centuries. And so I think Mormons are on pretty good ground in saying, well, we believe in the same kind of Trinity that the first Christians believed in. It certainly isn't a part of creedal Christianity, and Mormons would be the first to admit, no, they are not Orthodox Christians. But it seems curious to define the word Christian in terms of developments that occur 3 and 4 centuries after the death of Christ.
Valerie Cooper, you have been here a few times before. You and I are friends.
Yes.
I feel like I can get away with giving you a hard time, especially because, you know, you are, as much as anybody I know, familiar with text of what is considered Christian scripture. And it seems to me that in the book that most Christians consider holy writ, there are all kinds of things that modern-day Christians would consider problematic. I mean, the idea that a homosexual act is an abomination and anyone who commits one should be executed. The idea that working on the Sabbath is an abomination and anyone who engages in that should be executed.
Sassing your parents.
The idea that divorce is an abomination and anyone who engages in that, especially sexual behavior after that, should be killed. So I guess what I'm wondering is, how can you have those kinds of things in holy writ that most Christians pretty much ignore today, and then say, you know, somebody whose interpretation of scripture or who has additional scripture other than ours, maybe we can't really call them Christians.
Can't we stipulate that the definition of Christianity is a tough one? That it's something that
I don't stipulate.
That many people struggle over what it means to be Christian. I mean, if this were an easy question.
Yeah, but you see, where you and I fight all the time.
All the time.
I don't think anybody else has a right to decide for me whether or not I'm a Christian.
I think Matt agrees with you on that point.
Certainly. And, I mean, I would say two things. One is, I think as a scholar of religion that we should respect people's self-definition. Right. So to a certain degree, I would say if Mormons consider themselves Christians, then I'm content with accepting that as a scholar of religion.
But that's more of a sociological designation than a theological.
That's right. To me, the really interesting question here. To me, the really interesting question here, though, is what's at stake here in this conversation?
Yes.
What is at stake when we think about who is a Christian and who is not? There are many things at stake there. Some people may say eternal salvation is at stake.
Yes.
But certainly in the context of the United States, another thing that has historically been at stake is that is full belonging in this society.
Right.
And I think that's part of what we hear in the addition to the Book of Mormon, Another Testament of Jesus Christ, emphasis on Jesus Christ in the title, assertion of Christian identity. This is a part of saying, you know, we belong in this society. And I think that's really powerful given the history of persecution that is such a part of Mormon history and identity.
It looks like our last call, maybe this one coming in from Harrisonburg. I think this is Dathan.
Yes.
Your question or comment for our guests, please, Dathan.
Yes, I mean, you've talked about a lot of issues. I just was unsatisfied with the discussion about the reference text in the Book of Mormon. I happen to be a member of the church you're discussing, and when you take, I think, any text out of its whole entirety, it's easier to get one meaning from it. But I've considered that issue about, you know, skin color and you know, what we're supposed to learn from that. And my reading of the Book of Mormon on a lot of issues requires me to gain understanding from continuing to read the entire text. And my read on that issue is the lesson is not that there should be any prejudice for any people or group or color, but that in that text there was a relationship between two groups that split up. One was a covenant people of the Lord, and the other wasn't. But at different times, any one of those groups was living according to what was taught as true principles, and the other wasn't. And there was sort of a back and forth. So, I just wanted to comment that, you know, the Book of Mormon itself is available, readable. If anyone's familiar with New Testament language, and even, you know, Isaiah, which is a little bit harder, you know, they can discover it for themselves. And I actually sent an email earlier about how the question of what do Mormons believe in a brief answer, initially I was kind of dissatisfied because we went into sort of the academic side, but there's some basic tenets, and you know, the Articles of Faith lay out a rich 13-point approach to understanding it. But
well, Dathan, I really appreciate that you called in addition to wherever that email went, because unfortunately, we don't have a way to receive emails here during the live broadcast. But Valerie, go ahead.
No, Dathan, thanks so much for that comment. Actually, I'm incorporating part of the Book of Mormon in a course that I'm offering this fall on religion, race, and politics in America, because I think it's a fascinating issue. I actually would say my answer to that would be that I have a different understanding of the Book of Mormon. You have an understanding of the Book of Mormon as an ancient text. I actually believe that it's a product of the 19th century and that it reflects skin color prejudice that was very prevalent in 19th century America precisely because we were debating the issue of slavery. I think that the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament talk about people by nationality, by their nation, by their language, by their religion, never by, say, their skin color, their hair type, their eye shape. And so you don't know me, you haven't seen me, I'm African-American. So for me, this is a really important issue. And I think it remains an unresolved issue in the Mormon church, in the Church of Latter-day Saints, even though blacks were allowed to ascend to the priesthood in 1978, these texts are still present in the Book of Mormon. And I think that on some level, although there are blacks and people of color in the Book of Mormon, I suspect that there would be more.
We are about to run out of time.
Right.
So Dathan and Harrisonburg, thank you so much
thank
for
your Dathan.
Call. Bob Brown from James Madison University, religious scholar and historian. You've been awfully quiet. Going back to the first question we started with, do you think there's anything that we haven't touched on that ought to be added?
I think real briefly, one of the questions you asked us in sort of getting into this was this question about whether Mormonism is a cult or not. And that's one of the...
Actually, I didn't ask that, but, you know...
Yeah, I mean, not on the air, but prior to the air.
No, that wasn't me.
Yeah.
No.
And I think that's something, you know, that came up during the Republican primaries. That was the chief criticism, Romney, he belongs to a cult. And that's certainly, we may not have time to consider that, but people define cults as dangerous, deceptive sorts of organizations that are kind of socially pernicious. My take on Mormonism would be that it's not a cult. It may be a new religious movement. It may be a Christian heresy, if some of us have said. It might be the restoration of pure Christianity, but I don't think it's an authoritative, deceptive, socially pernicious sort of group.
Terrell Givens, it's my understanding from talking to you in the past that you have kind of a working definition of the term cult that you might want to offer.
Well, I actually get it from Martin Marty. He said a cult means you belong to a church I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it doesn't really have any more sociological value than as a term of opprobrium in today's environment.
Yeah, the way I phrase that, this is Matt Hedstrom, in my courses, is a cult is somebody else's religion, which is, in a sense, the same thing, yeah.
I think we might be able to go on for a few more hours with the question, what do Mormons believe? But you all have given us a much better sense of what's contained in the answer to that question, or at least part of the answer. So thank you to our guest, University of Virginia historian Matt Hedstrom, UVA religion scholar Valerie Cooper, James Madison University religion scholar Bob Brown, and with us by phone from the University of Richmond, Professor of Religion and Literature Terrell Givens. Thanks so much, all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Our associate producers are Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Juspay and Inner Rhythm. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org. And when you get there, click on Programs and then click on Virginia Insight. And if you go to that page, you will find links to more information about all of our guests. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.